Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Narratries podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Key Man is an investigative business nonfiction book by Simon Clark and Will Lauch about Arif Naqvi, the founder of the Dubai-based private equity firm Abraj Group. Drawing on reporting for the Wall Street Journal, the book examines how Naqvi became a favored figure among governments, development institutions, philanthropists, and global business leaders by presenting private equity as a tool for social progress in emerging markets. Its central subject is not only an alleged financial fraud, but the cultural and institutional environment that made the fraud plausible for so long. The authors trace how a persuasive story about impact investing, poverty reduction, healthcare, and growth markets attracted investors such as public agencies and charitable organizations before concerns over missing funds exposed deeper governance failures. The book functions as a corporate crime narrative, a study of elite trust, and a cautionary account of how moral language can weaken scrutiny when attached to financial returns. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Arif Naqvi as the indispensable intermediary between capital and emerging markets. A central theme of The Key Man is Naqvi's ability to present himself as the rare figure who could translate between Western capital and politically complex emerging markets. Abraj was not marketed merely as another private equity firm. It was framed as a gateway to regions where investors wanted growth, influence, and social legitimacy, but often lacked local knowledge. Naqvi's background, confidence, and access allowed him to appear uniquely qualified to connect development goals with profitable investments in the Middle East, Africa, South Asia, and other growth markets. This intermediary role made him attractive to governments and global institutions because he seemed to reduce uncertainty. The book shows why that perception mattered in private equity. Investors often commit large sums while relying heavily on the manager's credibility, reporting, and judgment. Naqvi's personal reputation, therefore, became part of Abraj's financial infrastructure. The title points to this dependency. He was the key man whose presence reassured backers that complexity was being managed. Clark and Lauch use his rise to show how global finance can concentrate trust in charismatic individuals, especially when those individuals claim both moral purpose and privileged access to difficult markets. Secondly, impact investing as a persuasive narrative and a source of due diligence risk, the book gives particular attention to impact investing, the promise that capital can earn competitive returns while improving lives. Naqvi's version of this idea was powerful because it appealed to investors who wanted financial performance without the reputational discomfort often attached to aggressive capitalism. Healthcare funds, poverty reduction, job creation, and regional development became part of Abraj's public identity. The problem explored by Clark and Lauch is not that impact investing is inherently fraudulent, but that a morally attractive narrative can soften skepticism. When an investment manager appears to be aligned with public good, investors may become less inclined to ask adversarial questions about cash flows, fees, related party transactions, or fund governance. The book therefore treats impact language as both an ethical aspiration and a possible camouflage. Naqvi's claims resonated in a period when business leaders, philanthropists, and policymakers were eager to prove that markets could solve social problems. This made Abraj's story unusually compelling. The author's reporting suggests that good intentions can create their own blind spots the more investors wanted the model to be true. The easier it became to overlook signals that required independent verification. Thirdly, the mechanics of private equity opacity and the movement of investor money. The Key Man stands out because it explains a complex financial scandal through the specific vulnerabilities of private equity. Unlike public companies, private equity funds often operate behind confidentiality, long investment horizons, and limited external visibility. Investors receive reports, valuations, and assurances, but they may not have immediate access to the underlying cash movements. In the Abraj case, the book focuses on allegations that money intended for specific funds or portfolio uses was diverted, delayed, or moved in ways that concealed liquidity problems. The significance is not simply that funds went missing, but that the structure of the industry gave managers room to manage perception. If capital calls, distributions, bridge financing, and intercompany transfers are not transparently monitored, misconduct can appear as temporary timing pressure rather than fraud. Clark and Lauch show how the credibility of a sophisticated institution can mask ordinary cash stress. The narrative also illustrates why fund governance depends on boring controls, segregated accounts, independent administrators, responsive auditors, and investors willing to challenge explanations. The scandal becomes a lesson in how financial complexity can turn trust into an operational weakness when oversight is deferred to reputation. Fourthly, elite validation and the social proof that protected Abraj from scrutiny. Another important topic is the role of elite validation. Naqvi's network included prominent business figures, development agencies, political circles, philanthropic leaders, and international forums. The book shows how such associations can become a form of social proof. When respected institutions appear to trust a financier, other investors may treat that trust as evidence of safety. This creates a circular pattern. Each prestigious relationship makes the next one easier to secure, and the expanding network reduces the perceived need for independent doubt. Clark and Lauch are especially interested in the culture surrounding gatherings such as DeVos, where public commitments to inclusive growth and responsible capitalism can coexist with limited scrutiny of implementation. The issue is not that elite networks are automatically corrupt, but that they can reward fluent narratives, access, and confidence. NACFI's appeal depended on his ability to speak the language of both profit and purpose. That combination made him valuable to people who wanted practical exposure to emerging markets and symbolic association with development. The book, therefore, examines fraud as a social process, not only a financial one. Abraj's credibility was reinforced by the very people and institutions that should have demanded stronger evidence. Lastly, organizational complicity, complacency, and the failure of internal challenge, the book also points beyond NACFI as an individual and toward the internal environment that allowed the problems at Abraj to continue. Large financial misconduct rarely depends on one person acting in total isolation. It usually requires employees who execute instructions, colleagues who rationalize irregularities, advisors who accept narrow explanations, and senior figures who avoid direct confrontation. Clark and Lauch describe a firm where loyalty to the founder, pressure to preserve the institution, and dependence on continued fundraising made challenge difficult. This matters because corporate fraud is often sustained through incremental accommodation. A questionable transfer may be treated as temporary. A misleading explanation may be accepted because the alternative is reputational collapse. A subordinate may believe that someone more senior has approved the decision. The result is a system in which responsibility becomes dispersed even while authority remains concentrated. The book's value lies in showing that governance failures are cultural as well as procedural. Formal controls matter, but they depend on people being willing to use them. Abraj demonstrates how charisma, hierarchy, and institutional self-preservation can convert warning signs into problems to be managed rather than evidence to be investigated. In conclusion, The Key Man is best suited to readers interested in financial scandals, investigative journalism, private equity, development finance, and the ethics of impact investing. It will be especially useful for investors, nonprofit leaders, policymakers, students of corporate governance, and anyone trying to understand how sophisticated institutions can be misled by a persuasive founder. Its practical benefit is a sharper sense of what due diligence must include, not only confidence in a mission, but verification of cash controls, reporting integrity, fund structure, and incentives. Its intellectual benefit is the way it connects one alleged fraud to broader questions about elite networks, moral branding, and the desire to make capitalism appear socially redemptive, compared with many corporate scandal books. The Key Man is distinctive because the setting is not Silicon Valley hype or Wall Street trading culture, but the intersection of private equity, global development, philanthropy, and emerging markets. That setting makes the case more unsettling. The victims were not only profit-seeking investors, but also institutions that claim to support healthcare, poverty reduction, and public welfare. Clark and Lauch show how the language of doing good can become part of a financial sales pitch, and why noble objectives require more scrutiny, not less. The book stands as a detailed warning about trust when reputation outruns evidence. If you would like to support Simon Clark, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.